lot of similarities. My grandmother taught me to do that. And as you were turning, you don't just do it up and down. You have to twist it, get a little twist motion in there. And sing Come Butter Come. I remember my grandmother doing that, and then she dipped the butter out and put it in a little wooden butter mold that she had, and we'd press it out, and then she'd put it in the refrigerator, and if she made more than one, and she'd just leave sitting out, and it wouldn't last long because she always had good hot biscuits at every meal, or cornbread or something like that. She'd smear that butter on. So. Oh, well, that's a day gone by, and something that we can look back on and really cherish.
I'm really glad that you brought that up. I had not thought about that in a while. And something that's so precious. I guess, there were times when my dad would show me the first thing about changing a tire on the car. So he'd go over it, and I was so small, I wasn't much help. But I was going to remember everything I saw, and everything he told me. So I look back on this, on that part of life, and I think, I was pretty fortunate. I know there are some kids who just don't have those experiences. Maybe they didn't have their father didn't live to teach them the things that a little boy ought to know. I was fortunate in that. And there's some men who reach adulthood and they don't know how to change a tire. it sounds a little funny, but it's true. I had a friend in Michigan who, he grew up in a city, and I frankly did not. And he couldn't understand how I could find my way in the woods. He says, well, now how can you know which way to go? And if you've not been through that already, there's not a path to follow or anything like that. How do you know which way to go? And there's no street signs. How do you know where you are? And I thought that was those were the funniest questions. His name was Paul, and he was a city boy, and I liked him a lot, but he was ignorant.
Hang on a minute, there, Larry. It's after 10 o'clock. I'm gonna see if I got any other check-ins. Additional check-ins for the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. Call KI4DOS.
KI4DOS. For your 4 Foxtrot Hotel Juliet, Gene and Taylor's. Negative and negative, over.
Gene, W4FHJ, Mr. Gene over there in Taylor's. Appreciate you being with us tonight there, young man. Hope you are doing well. You take care over there in Taylor's. Back to you, Larry, KK4JBQ, KI4DOS, and the Blue Ridge 2-meter net.
You say before, let the man on the mountain have his say. Well, thinking about Paul, bless his heart, he was kind of, as my mom would say, turned funny. And I went to a gathering, you might say, of some friends and met some people that I knew and some people that were just mutual friends. You know, everybody was not friends with everybody. I met some new people that were friendly. But this same Paul, bless his heart, drove his new car to this shindig. It was a big barn. It was kind of a barn dance. My first time ever at a barn dance. But these were pretty well-to-do people. think he was about 19 when he came to work in the same place that I worked in. We hit it off. He was friendly enough, and he invited everybody in our department to come to this barn dance. So I came there, and I came with one person, and ended up, Paul needed to, he was not familiar with this new car. So he says, I'd really like to have you ride along with me in case there's something, you know, I don't know what he was wanting, but as it turned out, it was a good thing. Because, see, now, Paul drank a little bit. Actually, that night, he drank a little bit more than he ought to. And I don't drink at all, so I was his sober passenger. And he had so much, I was a little fearful to tell you the truth. But he started driving, and he got sick. He got sick in his brand new automobile. And so we did the best we could do in the short term to clean things up, and I drove him home. And gosh, I don't remember how I got home myself that night. Oh my goodness, I really don't. Yeah, it was complicated. Anyway, but Paul was a nice fellow. He just needed to live a little longer. You know, sometimes you don't pick up everything you need when it comes to needing it. You know, you need to live a little longer before you attempt some things. And I hope I was a good example to him. I have, I learned my lesson with alcohol early. Matter of fact, when I was 16 years old, my dad sat me down and he says, you know, I've talked with you about this before, and you're 16 today. And so he had a cigar, he had a cigarette, and he had a shot of whiskey. And then he said, now, you're 16, you can have all of that. And if you want, or just, you know, any part that appeals to you, just, you know, today is, you're a man today. Well, I thought all of that was ridiculous. I did. But I thought, why not? And I got as sick as I've ever been in my life. And if you listen to the contents of what took me about 5 minutes to partake, none of that was going to be good for me. And it made me sick, really, really sick. But it did what I think my dad wanted it to do. It made me swear off all of that.
Hey, he was just trying to teach you a lesson to keep you from having to learn it the hard way. My dad, I don't know, I was little, and I snuck a cigarette out of his pack, and I don't know how he missed one. I still don't know that. But I don't know if I smell like cigarettes or what. When I came back in, I smoked it, or tried to. Smoked and coughed and carried on, and it almost made me sick. But the next day, Dad worked third shift, and at this time, the next day he brought home a great big old cigar. That thing looked like it was about an inch and a half in diameter and about 2 feet long. Wasn't that big, of course, but, you know, it was a pretty good-sized cigar. And he said, well, you going to steal my cigarettes? He said, here, smoke this cigar. And I started smoking that cigar, and I turned 14 shades of green. And I was like you. I got sick of the dog. But, you know, I made it through that, and then that didn't keep me from taking the habit up later in life. But I thought if I ever got through, with Daddy watching me smoke that cigarette and get sick, I wouldn't touch it again, but I did.
You know, my dad was a big one on experiencing things. He knew from his own life that there are two ways of learning about anything. Now, some things, it just requires that you read about it and that you talk about it. You watch somebody else do it. You know, there's some things that all of that applies. But there's also some things that you just have to jump in. You really do. There's a time for talking about it, and then there's a time for doing it. And that's how I think it was. We did not, believe me now, Gary, we did not talk about that time. That I can recall, we did not talk about that again. I wondered. I think I found my answer. But I wondered if that was the most generous way he could have taught me what he taught me that day. Probably not generous at all. But it was something that was a lifelong lesson. And just like you, I had not had my last lesson. I was a member of a theater group when I was in my early 20s, I guess. And I made a bad decision. And you know, if you're going to do it big. So we had a run of a play that we had worked up, and very successful. We had, I think, 7 performances, and everybody was happy and pleased and looking forward to the next one. It was a community theater, so we would be doing something else for the next few months. But not until we had a party. And these were party people. I'll tell you, theater people are party people. So we went out to another theater and watched another theater group do their play. And they served alcohol there. And it was everywhere. I didn't order anything. I got along just fine there. But when it all broke up and we were all going to be heading home, the person that I was going to be riding with, they said they'd be a while. So I saw this huge open area where everybody had been sitting, and there was probably 50 glasses, some of them half full. And I thought to myself, now here's my opportunity. I'm just going to take a little sip out of each one of those and to see what it all tastes like. You know, that just challenged me to do something. And again, here I go again. I got sick of the dog. It was mixing everything, you know. None of that was the same. Everything was different. And I didn't realize what that would do. It was a horrible night. Oh, boy, it was a horrible night. But here again, it taught me something that I will never forget and helped me help put some limits on me. Something I can always remember how it felt. I won't go into details. It's interesting, but not something that one should broadcast, I guess. But something I'll never forget is just how sick I got. You talk about several shades of green. Yeah. Oh, well, it served me well to stay away from the hard stuff. Juice of many kinds, but none of that hard stuff. KK4 JBQ.
KLS in the Blue Ridge 2-meter net with KK4 JBQ. Larry, you know, there again, you know, we sometimes say we learn from our mistakes, but we don't always learn because sometimes we go back and make them again. So maybe it takes us 2 times sometimes to figure out what our mistake was and not to do it again. But, you know, the University of Hard Knocks is a tough university to have to go through.
But, you know, I'm old enough now to realize that there's a lot of ways to live life. And no matter how you choose to live it, if you write a check, you've got to stand behind it, you know. And I hope that was the right analogy to use. Don't write any checks that you can't cash, that whomever you wrote it to can't cash. Don't do that. And so I learned a lesson. It'd be good if you could plan to do that. You know, you start out, and that would be a good thing to teach or to reveal to a young person. How it is you make a life decision like that. And, you know, there's a bunch of them, you know. Every human being has to walk their path. And I'm pleased that I'm still here without much wear and tear, really. And that's going to help, you know. Right now, I'm living, breathing, and in fairly good shape. And I'm pleased about that because there's some rough roads coming. I've watched other people live through this part of life, and it's, you know, it can be interesting, and it can be the hardest part of your road, you know. You know, folks like that. I've had relatives that, especially growing up the way they had to, living off the land and working very hard every day. So you reach your 70s and you're just about finished. You're just about done. And some of the things that you were going to have to get through just because of the way you live life, you know, it's harder when you're flat on your back and you know you're not getting up again. I had an uncle like that. He had diabetes before we knew much about it, and he would not get up again. And he took my hand. I was not that well acquainted with him. He was my mama's brother. I was not that well acquainted, but just because I was kinfolk, he took my hand and he said a prayer, and he talked like I'd never heard anybody talk before, you know. And I don't remember every word, but I remember his attitude. And so I've now come to that part of my life where he was. I'm in a lot better shape, but It's, you know, getting old is not for sissies. I'll just put it that way. KK4 JBQ.
There's a fella told me, he says, you got to be tough to get old.
I can put it. Yeah, I was probably in my early, I mean really early teens, 13 or 14, when I was at his bedside. He wouldn't live more than a month after we talked and he said that prayer. And, you know, I'm glad he did because I'll never forget. If you can do something in your lifetime that anybody else will never forget, that's a big something, really. But you have your opportunities. People out there there may be one or two more that they're still listening. But if you still have your latter years to enjoy, try to pass on something that you know and make somebody else's walk a little easier. You really can. And that's what my uncle was trying to do for me. He was trying to show me what it was to be humble. You could tell that from not only the way he talked, but what he said. And I just have that very good memory he was giving me something there. And it's just occasionally when something like that happens, something that you treasure right on and on. I wasn't 15 years old yet, and I still think about him and that day. My mama wasn't much about talking about her people. I wasn't well acquainted with my people. She had her reasons for that, I suppose. We did not talk about it. Although, maybe it's enough to realize that, oh, my goodness, her mother passed away when she was 12 years old. And there were a lot of children. She was the youngest girl. And for some reason, raising the rest of them largely fell to her. Maybe she was just more adapted to taking care of little ones and such. I think until she was, I think she married when she was 20, my mother did. And she raised all the ones that were younger than her. I think there were 9 children that were younger than her. They had lots of kids back then. That grandfather went on to marry again, and so there were 2 families. And altogether, he had 23 children. And my dad's mom, she had 13. Back then, they had bunches of kids. Well, they were farmers, so, you know, you had to have hands to work. I know that's a joke, but it's the truth, too. KK4JBQ.
Sometimes I think, you know, we might have grown up in the best era. Might not have been better. You know, might have been terrible that we grew up in. But when we get to reminiscing and thinking about things that we did, you know, a lot of moms were stay-at-home moms. You know, the dad worked either out in the fields or, and of course, when the children got old enough, they worked out in the field if they were farmers or whatnot. But you know, most moms were stay-at-home moms, and nowadays I feel sorry for the children. You know, they get up and they go to school, and if they don't go to school, you know, they have turn their computer on and have a work day through the computer there, and still have to be in school, and then they get out of that, and then they pick up their video games and such as that, because mom's not there, you know, to help them with their homework, or, you know, they may have some chores to do, they may not, stuff like that, I don't know, but, I think that the generation that's coming up now, you know, the small children, are missing out on a lot.
Yeah, I think you might be right, but it's just happenstance, you know. With all of those small children and all of the work that had to be accomplished, it was just a different life. I recall my dad telling me about, his birthday was in April. And one April, along about the middle of April, he recalls he was 18 years old that day, and he was hoeing tobacco. He would do that all day long. And while he was out there, now this is April again, it snowed. So there you are. And he would remember that right until the day he died. We talked about that many times over his lifetime. But whatever ground you walk, in ways you can share that, and in other ways you have to walk it by yourself. Yeah, it's about like that old song, you've got to walk that lonesome valley You got to walk it by yourself. There ain't nobody else going to walk it for you. You've got to walk it by yourself. I could sing it, but you don't want to hear it that way. My dad was such a, he was such a good dad to me, and I never had any children, so I don't, I was able to pass along what he taught me about how you bring up kids, you know. He thought that was largely my mama's job, but in ways, the ways that he could and he felt comfortable to, he did his part as well. And I remember it was one of the last time I saw my dad alive. He came to me, it was after supper, and I was standing up and I was talking to my mom, and he was right behind me, and my mom said, "Your dad wants you." And so I turned around and there he was, you know, and he just took me by both arms and he says, "Have I been a good daddy to you?" Goodness gracious. I said, "Dad, all I can say, it was near perfect." And I wanted to say something, while it might not have been absolutely true, it was what he needed to hear. So I had a good one. KK4JBQ.
Go Aston Blue Ridge 2 meter net with KK4JBQ, Mr. Larry over there in Greer. Well, Larry, that is wonderful. We could sit here and talk for hours, I guess. But I've really enjoyed it. But I guess I better see if we got any other check-ins, and we'll close the net out here in a minute. But I'll be right back to you. Do we have additional check-ins all the way through the alphabet for the Blue Ridge 2 meter net? Okay, KI4DOS. You were talking about telling your dad what he needed to hear. I think he gave you the opportunity to say what you needed to say as well. You needed to say it and he needed to hear it.
That's true. Now, all speech is all that's done. And I know wherever he is and whatever he understands it. Wherever he is. Well, that was hard enough to say. We were cautioned not to call any man good, if you remember that scripture. But I'm sorely tempted, because he was good to me. There were some times when he had to set me straight. And he knew only one way to do that. But anyway, what I had to say to him was weighted. You know, the reality was probably different as somebody else would look on and evaluate it. But my evaluation was that was as true as I could possibly say it. That's how I felt when he asked me, and that was a shock that he would ask me that question. But it was one of the last things he would say to me, because my dad had dementia, and he forgot how to distinguish between people. I could sit and talk with him, and he wouldn't understand why I was saying so much, but he would mistaken me for one of his brothers. He once mistook me for his dad in a conversation. And it wasn't that the light was down low. His dementia had just gotten that bad. It was when he mistook me for his mother that I was just floored. And I knew that he had he was losing a grip on reality, you know. And it's hard. It's hard to go through something like that with people that you love. But it offered me, and you've got to look for these things. It offered me once an opportunity to cut his hair. My mama told me, she said, your dad won't go to the barber. He don't want to go anywhere anymore. And I says, well, Mama, I'll cut his hair. I'm probably not good at it, but he's not going to know the difference, and I would be proud to cut his hair. So I went out, and we talked the whole time. He sat in a chair. We put a towel around him, you know, so he wouldn't get the shavings all over him, you know. And for a boy to cut his father's hair, and to know that surely this would be one of the last times, and it was one of the last times I could talk with him. I tried my best to make it something that we would both enjoy. And I found some way to enjoy it. Sometimes you just got to take whatever reality it is in front of you, to take it and make it something you can enjoy, like right now, that I tell you this. I enjoy doing it. It was kind of weird, but I found that I had not a marvelous touch or anything with a pair of scissors and a comb, but I made him look presentable best I could. KK4, JBQ.
The opportunity to cut my dad's hair, but he did get into a position at one point in his life that he could not shave, and I went over there and shaved him. And then my dad passed away, and George's dad fell ill, and George's dad had, George got three brothers, or had three brothers, two of those have passed now, but they were alive at the time, and her dad called me, and he said, I need you to do me a favor. I said, what, Daddy? And he says, I need you to come give me a shave. And I said, well, why didn't you ask one of your boys? He said, because you know how to do it. You shaved your daddy. And I said, okay, I'll come do it. So I got to shave not only my dad, but Joey's too.
I'm glad you told me that. I wouldn't have had the knowledge, and I would have some fear bringing a blade that close to somebody else's face. But I'm glad you told me that. That's a special thing. Yeah. Well, as I look back on that, I'm sure as you look back on times like that, you count it as a blessing. Yeah. So we have that in common. I guess blessings can come anytime, and unexpected blessings are even sweeter. Gary, it's been my pleasure tonight, sir, and we've taken it until after 10:30. Everybody's had a generous opportunity to show up tonight. Don't know what the count is, but it's as much as we could make it, right? KK4, JBQ.
I have thoroughly enjoyed it tonight. We have had a good long conversation. And we did it over the airways so other folks could listen in as well. You know, and I hope some of the folks that were still out there listening got caught up in some of the memories, and maybe it brought back some for them. But I thoroughly enjoyed it there, young man, and look forward to doing it again. And either me or Patrick One will be calling the net again tomorrow night. He was supposed to call tonight, so he might call tomorrow night for me. We'll just wait till tomorrow and see what happens. But anyway, Larry, thanks for staying in there and stretching it out a little bit. Enjoyed it. And we will do it again soon, I hope. 7-3, my friend, tell Miss Donna we said hello from over here. If we have additional check-ins or additional comments for the Blue Ridge 2-meter net, Before we close it out, call KI4DOS. Submit my net report here electronically, and then we'll finish closing the net out. Had a grand total of 43 tonight. Numbers are a little bit light, but that's okay. We do appreciate each and every one of you out there in Radio Land that checked in with us. Come back again tomorrow night, and there will be a net controller here, whether it's me or Patrick, and give us one or the other a good dose of rider strap. This is KI4DOS, now securing the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. But our thanks for all those folks checked in with us. We will now return the repeater to normal amateur use. 73, good night, God bless. This is KI4DOS clear.